Welcome, then, to another episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and this is the show that takes you inside the Houston Rockets and gives you the most timely look at everything going on with the team. I know we didn't have our usual intro today, and that's because, well, we've got a busy show. The news of the day, of course, is Russell Westbrook signing that 3-year deal to stay in Oklahoma City. There's a player option after 2018, so it could be as short as 2 years. But for all intents and purposes, it means the Thunder are clearly not going to tear it down this season. So what does this mean for the Rockets? The first instinct for a lot of fans is to be disappointed, and I do get why. Lots of people have talked about the potential for the Rockets and James Harden to maybe go after Russell Westbrook in 2017 free agency, including me on this very show. Now that's not an option. It also means that the Thunder are going to be competitive in the Western Conference next year, and that's just one more team that the Rockets are going to have to compete with for playoff seeding. But with that said, there are some other ripple effects that might be positive. Here's how I see it. Harden's extension with the Rockets absolutely represented a paradigm shift in negotiations with star players in the NBA. It hadn't really been done before with a true elite player under this collective bargaining agreement. The reason is that under this CBA, contract renegotiations must come out of cap space. In other words, the volume and the salary increase for Harden, Westbrook, or anybody else must come out of a team's available cap room starting that very year. In the past, this wasn't really feasible. When the salary cap was around $65 million, give or take a few million, it wasn't easy to build an NBA contender and be anywhere near that cap line. In other words, if you were $8 million or more under the salary cap, and that's the amount you'd need to be under to give someone like Harden or Westbrook a new deal, if you were that far under the cap, the odds are that your team simply wasn't very good. And if your team isn't good, why would the star player want to re-sign there? Good teams typically operated above the cap because being a good team required using every penny of cap space that you could find. But at least for the next couple of years, that equation is changing. With the staggering and sudden increase of the salary cap, many teams, including the Rockets, have players whose contract value is disproportionately low. In the case of Houston, that's Pat Beverly and Trevor Ariza. Those are the guys that really stand out. These are two starting caliber NBA players who will make roughly $7 million each next year. And really, that's an absolute bargain. With those types of contracts, the Rockets are able to fill out the rotation with the likes of Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon while still holding enough cap room to renegotiate Harden's contract. Needless to say, this couldn't have happened in the past. If you had spent that kind of money in another offseason, the wiggle room to still renegotiate with Harden would not have been there. So before the cap exploded like it did, NBA stars generally all hit free agency because there was no realistic route around it. And in my opinion, the players were pleased with this because it gave them so much control. Sure, an extended contract, in theory, provides more security. But for true star-level NBA players, and here I'm talking Harden, Westbrook, Kevin Durant, guys like that, even if they're injured, they're still going to get every penny of the max. Had Durant been a free agent in 2015, even after all those foot injuries, is there any doubt he'd have still gotten a full max deal? I don't have any. True NBA stars are just that rare of a commodity. So what you had was this rare dynamic that worked for both sides. Teams couldn't really offer extensions to their star players because it was counterintuitive to building a contender. And players weren't really bothered by it. The lack of financial security was never really a real threat, given how rare NBA stars are, and the players loved the flexibility that being a free agent offered. Being a free agent allows players to have all the leverage and control, and they love it. So for years, letting stars hit free agency became the norm because both sides benefited from it. Now, though, that's suddenly changed. With this cap explosion, GMs have found themselves with the ability to build a quality roster while still holding enough room for a renegotiated and extended salary of their star player. All it took was one player that was willing to be the first one to take the leap of faith, and fortunately for the Rockets, that player was James Harden. So what does that mean going forward? Other GMs are going to use the Harden extension as a template. They're going to go to their star players and say, hey, we've got the room to renegotiate and extend you. And if the player expresses any hesitation, you say, look, Harden was willing to do it. Why won't you? And right there, that player is going to have to put up or shut up. If the player still doesn't want to sign the extension, then his GM will know where his head is at, and he'd rather deal him than watch him leave for nothing. Because of that, I think you're going to see a lot more trades involving star players. This is where the Rockets come in, of course. We've talked before about how attractive the offers are that Daryl Morey might make. The Rockets aren't at the front of the line. They don't have the volume of high-level prospects and picks that a team like Boston does. However, they're also not at the back of the line. Part of the problem for the Rockets making offers in the past few months was really the uncertainty over Harden's future. For example, there's no way Morey could responsibly deal an unprotected future first rounder, much less multiple first rounders, without knowing Harden's plans, because you never know, he might desperately need that draft pick. If the Rockets have to rebuild, there's no way that he would deal those types of draft picks. Well, now with Harden's future secure, they're not going to rebuild, and as I said a few days ago, now I think those draft picks are in play. And all of a sudden, if the Rockets add one or two future first rounders to a package involving some of their young talent, that's Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, KJ McDaniels, and potentially even one or two of your cheap veterans like Beverly Nariza, all of a sudden that offer starts to look very competitive. All this is speculative, and we'll have to wait and see whether the Rockets can take advantage. But it's fascinating to me because now we can finally start to see where the market might be going. Whenever there's a big change in NBA economics, it's fascinating to watch because even these great executives don't have much of an idea of what's going to happen until the market actually starts moving. I'll give you another example of this. When the NBA had the lockout in 2011 that led to this new CBA, we knew that Mark Cuban broke up a championship team in Dallas just for the potential of having the cap room to go after someone like Dwight Howard. Obviously, that didn't work out. But that's not meant to be a criticism of Mark Cuban because he's a great owner. What it shows is how unpredictable these dynamics are. Cuban's belief was the cap room would be at a premium because the intent of the new collective bargaining agreement was to make it harder for stars to team up like what happened in Miami with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. What Cuban underestimated, though, was the ease at which teams could create cap room. Where this really became evident was the summer of 2013, when Golden State had zero cap room to speak of, but they cleared over $20 million in seconds by dealing Biedrins and a few others to Utah, and all they had to do was attach a couple of future draft picks as sweetener to get it done. What we learned through this process was that the supply of star players in the NBA simply isn't enough to fulfill the demand around the league. So lots of below-average teams who couldn't get these stars had excess cap room, which they were willing to use to absorb bad contracts, especially if it might get them an asset like a future draft pick. As far as Cuban and Dallas are concerned, what this led to was stars having more options than they expected, and the cap room and flexibility in Dallas was just not as attractive to someone like Dwight Howard as a roster in Houston or Golden State that had more established players on it. For the league as a whole, what these situations have to remind you of is that the league's intent does not always match the market reality. It takes seeing these situations come into practice before you can actually get a good grip on where the market might be heading. We've now had two fascinating case studies this summer in Harden and Westbrook, and to me, what this indicates moving forward is that you're going to see more star trades. If a player isn't willing to do that renegotiation, GMs will now see it as more of a red flag, and they'll react accordingly. Now, to be fair, it might all change in a couple of years, because eventually all salaries are going to have to reflect this higher salary cap. At that point, having a good team might become incompatible with having a leftover cap room to do a renegotiation. That's how it was the last few years. But at least for now, at least for the next couple of summers, I think this is the market. Teams are going to have room to build a competitive roster while also retaining their star player on a renegotiated deal. And if the player isn't willing to do that, I think the obvious conclusion is that you're going to see a lot more trades. And my bet is that the league-wide response is that you're going to see more star players available on the market. Anyway, that's enough speculation for one show, and we do have an interview to get to. Eric Spyropoulos is a writer at the Dream Shake, and if you don't know them, that's the SB Nation affiliate covering the Rockets. Eric had a great article recently about how Eric Gordon should fit into Houston's offense alongside Harden, so I wanted to get him on the show to talk about that and as well as a few other items. So let's go ahead and get him connected. All right, now we've got Eric on the phone with us. Eric Spyropoulos, how's it going today, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you today, Ben?
Oh, can't complain. End of a busy week as far as the NBA is concerned with the Russell Westbrook thing. Not so much as far as the Rockets are concerned. I've been talking the last couple of minutes about your piece on Eric Gordon. Of course, it's over on the Dream Shake. It's titled, What Should Eric Gordon's Role Be on the Rockets? And one of the things that you concluded in that piece, which we've since heard from the Rockets, is that he's a good fit for a bench role. At least to start off, why don't you go into why he's a better fit coming off the bench rather than starting alongside James Harden?
The main reason I think Gordon would be best suited coming off the bench in a kind of a six-man role around like 30 minutes per game. One, I really like Beverly's fit next to Harden, mainly defensively. Beverly's obviously a better defender than Gordon and Harden, obviously, so it gives you someone to guard opposing point guards. Whereas if you had Harden and Gordon in, together starting, one of them would have to guard point guards, and that would be pretty terrible defensively. So I think that to limit kind of the negatives on the defensive end, they shouldn't start. But also, I like Gordon just controlling the second unit more. In the article, I talk a little bit more that he's kind of an underrated playmaker. I mean, he's a career almost 3.5 assists per game. He's had seasons where he's averaged over 4 assists per game. So he can pass the ball a little bit better than people think. He can also, drive to the rim a little bit better than people think. So I think he's an underrated playmaker, which suits him better to lead the second unit when he's not playing alongside Harden. But they should stagger the minutes so Harden and Gordon do play together for stretches to unlock the true potential offensively for the Rocket system.
Yeah, one thing that really intrigued me in the article, there's a shot chart you included with it. And, sure, he takes a lot of threes. He's a very good shooter. We've heard that. But I don't want Rockets fans to get confused and think this is another, Marcus Thornton, just basically a gunner, because he takes a lot of shots at the rim, too. He's really good at attacking the paint when he wants to do that.
Yeah, he's not just going to stand around at the three-point line and just wait for the ball in his hands when Harden passes it to him with a couple seconds left on the shot clock. I think that they can kind of, D'Antoni, it's his job really to mingle Gordon into the offensive system so he can not only have the ball in his hands a lot when he's leading the second unit, but also integrate him with Harden so he's not just standing around in the corner.
Yeah. Talking about the defensive concerns, I think you made a good point, which is that he was never a bad defensive player to start his career, but it's probably the injuries that knocked a little off his athleticism and makes it difficult for him to stay in front of the ball. Is it easier, do you think, for him to defend point guards, shooting guards? Does it matter? Just curious what you think after kind of looking at his game film, where his defensive weaknesses are.
I really think it'd be better for him to guard shooting guards at this point. As I mentioned in the article, I just don't think he has the athletic ability because of his injuries. I mean, he's only 27, but with those injuries, his body has taken a beating over the years. So he's just not quick enough to keep up with the point guards, especially the elite point guards you have in the Western Conference. So having him, chase around shooting guards on the perimeter, I think is better suited for him instead of, you don't want to kind of put Gordon on an island guarding the elite point guards in the West. Mm-hmm. That's why I think playing with Harden, out of the two, you'd probably put Gordon on the point guards, which is why I think they should limit, having them, especially not having them start, but, that Gordon on the point guards for long stretches is not a good idea. Some other ways you could hide his defense is, I think that they could try and explore playing KJ McDaniels more.
Yep.
I think that KJ, when playing, he could guard the opposing point guards and would be better suited to do that, as he's a pretty good defender. And then also you could pair Gordon with Beverly for stretches and then have kind of, just Gordon take Harden off the court when Harden, sluggish or not playing well. Playing Beverly and Gordon, kind of a traditional 1-2, Beverly will still guard the point guard. So I think there are a couple ways to hide Gordon defensively, but one of them is not playing Harden and Gordon for long stretches.
Yeah, and another option that we've talked about on this show is, going a little bit of small ball and basically moving Ariza to the four and playing Beverly, Harden, and Gordon all at the same time. You don't mitigate the impact of Harden and Gordon together, but at least that way, you don't have Gordon guarding the point guards, which I agree with you. I think that's where, given his lack of foot speed, that's where he would be most vulnerable. Because I think Gordon's a fairly high IQ player. It's just a matter of, given his injuries, especially to his knees, sometimes he's just not quick enough to stop the ball. And, you do hope that maybe it can improve. It's worth noting that, he didn't have problems with the knees last year. So maybe, fingers crossed, in a bigger sample size, he can improve. But yeah, you certainly don't want to bet on it. You mainly, if you're the Rockets, you just want to plan to mitigate it as best you can. And kind of speaking of that mitigation theme, another thing I wanted to ask you about, because you've written a couple of good articles about the new players on the Rockets team, another new addition, besides the obvious of Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, is Nene. And Daryl Morey, he listed the probable starters for the Rockets, and he kind of agrees with you, it sounds like, that Gordon's better served as a sixth man off the bench. He said that Beverly, Harden, Ariza, and Anderson are likely to start. He did not commit to whether Clint Capella or Nene starts in the middle. If you're building the Rockets, who do you go to right now as your center?
I really think you have to give it to Capella. I mean, if you really believe in Capella, and I'm pretty sure Maury does and a lot of Rockets fans do, I think it's time to give him the reins at center and let him, you know, develop by starting. Nene's a good backup veteran, but I don't think when people saw the signing, they were like, oh, you know, he's going to definitely start. Like, you don't really think of Nene starting at this point in his career. He's there to kind of guide Capella as he starts. I just think that Capella is also a better fit for the Rockets starting lineup in that he's kind of a better screener and pick and roll player, and he's willing to play the pick and roll, unlike some other center we know that was in Houston for the past couple seasons.
Yes.
But Capella's a better screener and pick and roll player, what the Rockets need in the starting lineup. Nene's a better passer than Capella, which is why I think it'd be fine for him to, you know, to play in the second unit and run some offensive sets through him in the post. But in terms of the starting lineup, I think the Rockets need a screener, a pick-and-roll player for Harden, and that's exactly what Capella is. So I think it's time to give him the starting spot at center.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think you hit home a lot of good points. Another one that you didn't mention, but I feel like with Ryan Anderson, if he's starting at the four, you know you're going to have a deficiency in shot blocking. So Capella potentially offsets that. He's a potentially elite shot blocker, whereas Nene, at this point in his career, he's not really going to be a substantial shot blocker. The other thing that I wonder, this is just me kind of throwing out conspiracy theories, but we all know that Nene signed for well under market value. Not that Nene, you expected him to be a max guy or anywhere close, but you certainly did not expect Nene going into this offseason to be a room exception, 1 year, $2.9 million player. So my suspicion is that I don't think the Rockets promised him anything. I don't think Daryl Morey would say, look, you're going to play X minutes or start or whatever. But I think they want to at least be cautious in what they say publicly. You know, they want to make it clear, in my opinion, that Nene has every opportunity to earn minutes. So it's one of those, you know, they don't want to say that, you know, Clint Capella, who's never started more than or never played more than 19 minutes a game, is your hands down starter. I think they want Capella to earn it, and I think they want Nene to believe he has a shot. But in reality, you know, I think a lot of it's just, you know, paying respect to the veteran. In reality, I'm with you. I think Capella makes a lot more sense. When you look at the big men, we've talked Capella and Nene. Another option, both at the four as well as the five, is Donatas Mataiunas. And at this point, it looks like he's going to stay. You haven't heard any rumors with him elsewhere. We know he's had, you know, lunch or dinner, whatever you want to call it, with Mike D'Antoni. He's been around Houston. It seems like basically taking the Houston City tour several times this past month. How important is it to you to retain him?
I think it's actually kind of an underrated thing, how important it is to retain Mataiunas. The Rockets just made Michael Beasley's salary guaranteed this past Monday. So, I mean, technically Beasley could be a backup four, and then with Nene at a backup five, you're kind of too deep in the front court. But for Mike D'Antoni's system, Mataiunas is definitely the better fit than Beasley. Mataiunas can stretch the four, as we saw two seasons ago, and he's a pretty good passer for big man. It also doesn't hurt that he's 7 feet tall, so he can play at center like he did two seasons ago when Dwight was injured for half the games. But he can also play power forward next to a Capella or an Nene. I just think that Mataiunas is such a better fit for a D'Antoni system that it's actually kind of pretty. It's pretty important for the Rockets that they bring Mataiunas back, which as of now it looks like they will. Again, if some team throws out a crazy offer at Mataiunas in the next couple of days or weeks, then I mean, you know, if the Rockets can't match it, then it is what it is, and we'll go with Beasley as most likely a backup four. But Mataiunas is a better fit for a D'Antoni system, which is why I think it's pretty important that they bring him back.
Yeah, and I'll throw out my take, and you can respond to that. I don't think Mataiunas leaving would change the baseline expectation for the Rockets that much. I think no one's going to predict that much of him coming off back surgery until they see it. So I think we're all cautiously hoping for 15 to 20 minutes per game, and you know, we'd be pleased if he went any more than that. However, without Mataiunas, I think your upside goes substantially down. This, you know, the case for the Rockets to be a really good team, if you want to believe that this is a 50 to 55 win bunch that can, you know, compete with everybody besides the Warriors in the West, I think Monty Yunus getting to that level he was at two years ago, to where he's, you know, he's really a solid all around big. He's good defensively. He's good offensively. He's a good passer. I think your ups, you know, while your floor isn't that changed without Monty Yunus, to me, having him is crucial towards hitting the upside. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, no, I really agree. Especially if Monty Yunus can return to that level 2 years ago, I think it, you know, kind of unlocks another dimension of the D'Antoni system. Whereas if Beasley comes in the second unit as a backup four, let's say, Beasley is essentially just a ball stopper on offense. Yep. I mean, last season, Beasley only played 20 games for the Rockets, but when they would give him the ball, people would just stand around, almost like watching Harden, except it'd be like Harden 2.0 for a big man.
Yeah.
He'd stand around, do some dribbles and drive, and you'd hope that he made it in, made the shot, which he did quite often last year, but that's just not going to fit in the D'Antoni system.
Yeah, and the difference being that Beasley is nowhere near the passer that Harden is in addition to it.
Exactly. Beasley almost had blinders on him when he got the ball last season. Unlike Monty Yunus, who can play in the post, has some good post moves, can space the floor pretty well, and also is a pretty good passer. So I think Monty Yunus is kind of the quintessential big man for a Mike D'Antoni system.
Yeah. I've said before on the show, to me, Michael Beasley is a classic hedge. You know, he, because of his ability to play the four as well as the three, he gives them insurance on a lot of different fronts. You know, if for some reason they don't bring back Monty Yunus, or if Monty Yunus gets hurt again, then, you know, he can play at the four. If for some reason none of the wings pan out, I'm talking about Decker, KJ, Corey Brewer, then you can play him at the three. But in an ideal world, I think the Rockets are hoping for Beasley to be basically just that, insurance. And so one of the questions I was going to ask you, you know, to me, Michael Beasley's a wild card in this system, and does he average over or under 15 minutes per game next year? I think in the ideal scenario, what we've been talking about, I think he averages under that. Is that fair?
Yeah, an ideal scenario, Monty Yunus is back, and I think Beasley plays less than 15 minutes per game, kind of as a hedge, like you just said. He can play some small forward. If Brewer's having another atrocious year and the young players don't pan out, he can also play power forward if there are injuries, which there most likely will be with Nene and Ryan Anderson in the front court. If it's not an ideal situation, if Demo doesn't come back, Beasley will most likely play more than 15 minutes per game, because he can play multiple positions and because he'll be essentially the backup four. But if Demo's back and healthy, I can definitely see Beasley falling out of the rotation, almost clashing with D'Antoni, because he's such a ball stopper on offense and a pretty bad defender. And I wouldn't be shocked if Beasley plays decently well for the first month or two, to see him used in kind of trade bait by Daryl Morey with Corey Brewer and a young player and a draft pick to kind of upgrade the roster if the Rockets are exceeding expectations. So I think if Demo's back and healthy, Beasley could fall out of the rotation and be used in a trade.
Yeah, and you make a good point that, you know, there is an injury history with everyone in the front court save Capella. Ryan Anderson, Nene, Monty Yunus, if he's back, they do all have injury history, so Beasley's another hedge there. But yeah, I'm with you. If everything pans out, if these guys are healthy, then big picture, you know, Beasley's trade bait, especially on that $1.4 million deal, you know, he might be kind of the sweetener to get someone to take Corey Brewer if they need another nudge, something like that.
Yeah.
Last question for you. We've touched on a little of the young players, and I know you've written about them for the Dream Shake. And really, you look at the back end of this rotation, I'm talking about the guys that are maybe in the 8 through 11 spots. And, you know, you look at where the Rockets, we're assuming the starters are the big five, including Capella. You know Nene and Gordon are going to be your first two off the bench. And then you've got a big mix of guys, including Michael Beasley, including Demo, assuming he's back. And then you have these three young guys that are kind of on the verge, and that being Sam Decker, KJ McDaniels, and Montrezl Harrell. And we know who they're battling with. You know, Decker and KJ, they're battling it out with Corey Brewer and Michael Beasley for those backup 2 and 3 minutes. Harrell is trying to nudge his way into the front court alongside Demo, Nene, anyone else. Of those young guys, Decker, McDaniels, and Harrell, who do you think has the most likelihood of success and, you know, the least, at least looking at 2016?
Okay, well, I'll start off with KJ. I think he's the most likely to have success. I think that As we saw in the playoffs last season, the Thunder used Andre Robertson pretty well, kind of as like a cutter to the rim.
Good comparison.
And then and as an elite defender, KJ has elite defensive potential. I think he's very athletic. We've seen him do monster blocks, monster dunks. He's a super athletic. I think if they use him kind of as a Roberson, I think he would be able to find consistent playing time. It's just that over the years, the Rockets have been unwilling to essentially play KJ McDaniels for some reason, even though Corey Brewer was absolutely atrocious last year.
Yep.
So I think KJ is the best. I mean, this is obviously kind of being very optimistic and seeing and hoping that D'Antoni can use KJ in this way, but if they do, I think he'll find consistent minutes in the rotation. Second, I have Decker, mainly because I think he showed pretty good awareness in Summer League. I mean, he showed that he could, you know, he can play. I mean, obviously it is Summer League, so you have to take it with a grain of salt, but I think that if Decker can build a consistent jumper, which we haven't seen that much yet, he was a pretty good shooter in Summer League, but it's been kind of hit or miss with his jump shot. That's crucial to finding minutes in a Mike D'Antoni rotation. And then obviously both McDaniels and Decker, their minutes obviously depend on Corey Brewer's play. If Corey Brewer goes back to how he was two seasons ago in that run to the Western Conference Finals, then we won't be complaining about Brewer anymore. But if he plays like last year, we'll be wondering, you know, how long is Corey Brewer's leash going to be? I mean, last year it seemed like he'd have an atrocious game after an atrocious game, and J.B. Bickerstaff would continue to just roll him out onto the court kind of blindly. But I think KJ's first, Decker second, and then obviously I have Harrell third. In that ideal situation we talked about with Monte Ennis coming back, I just don't see the minutes for Montrezl Harrell because you got Ryan Anderson starting, potentially Demo / Beasley backing him up, and then you got Capella at center and Nene backing Capella up, and Harrell's too small for center.
Yeah.
So there really are no minutes for Harrell. And he wasn't even, I didn't find him to be too impressive in Summer League. He was developing a 3-point shot and it did not work.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna point out is that, you know, with them trying to help him develop a 3-point shot, that to me screams a guy who they're looking at as a longer term project. You know, if you're trying to take a guy who plays around the rim and then teach him to play in space, to me that's kind of an indicator. While I still like Montrez and I think long term he's going to be a role player in the NBA, it kind of tells you that, you know, they may be thinking a year from now rather than this coming season, you know, because developing a 3-point shot, playing in space, you know, that's stuff that takes a lot of time. And
Yeah,
the Rockets just aren't there quite yet. But in general, I thought you made some good points about KJ and Decker. And one thing that I think Rockets fans, it's going to take some time to get used to, but I think you're going to see, I think Mike D'Antoni is going to be substantially more willing to experiment than either Kevin McHale or especially J.B. Bickerstaff this past year. You know, I think a lot of Rockets fans just kind of take it as, well, Corey Brewer just plays and we can't explain why, but it is what it is, and just assume that's going to be the case. The thing with the Rockets this past year, it was a total survival mode. You know, from McHale hoping to keep his job to J.B. Bickerstaff, a first-time coach at 36 years old, slapped with the interim title, to, you know, the organization fighting against championship expectations in the preseason, trying to make the playoffs. Just being around the Rockets last year, it felt like every game was just scrapping and clawing for survival, for relevance, you know. And one of the things we've seen this offseason, you know, they've kind of taken a step back, you know, and said, let's look at the big picture. We got to retool. We have to do some things differently. So my hope is that there's going to be a lot more thought, long-term thought that goes into the decisions rather than last year, which was just kind of a survival, you know, how do we get through this particular game and all that sort of thing. So anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, we know Leslie Alexander's committed to playing the Mike D'Antoni system. So I feel like if certain players like a Brewer or a Beasley are not fitting into a system, you know, especially Leslie Alexander, it's coming from the top, it's coming from the owner who's committed to this system, they're going to try and, I think, would experiment with any kind of players on their roster, such as KJ and Decker, to see if someone will fit in the system if it's not Brewer and Beasley. So I think that there should be more experimentation with this roster.
Yeah, I would agree. Guys, that's Eric Spyropoulos. Good stuff. Why don't you tell everybody your Twitter handle and where people can find your work?
So my Twitter handle is at Eric Spyros. It's just a shortened of my last name. So
gotcha.
At Eric Spyros on Twitter. And then you can obviously find my work on the Dream Shake. And I also host my own small little basketball podcast called the 94 Feet Report. So you can find that on iTunes, et cetera.
Sounds good. I'll look for it. Eric, thanks so much for the time, bud.
All Thank you for having me, Ben.
That was Eric Spyropoulos. Thought he had some very good takes, especially on the newer Rockets like Eric Gordon and Nene, and what Rockets fans can expect from them as they head into a season in 2016-2017 that's going to feature a lot of new faces and a lot of new concepts. You can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Spyroz, and you can follow his work at the Dream Shake, which is the SB Nation affiliate covering the Rockets. And really, this feels like a good spot to end the show. It's our second of two shows this week, and you know, it's our scaled-down summer model because, let's be real, the next 6 weeks are going to be fairly quiet. Barring a trade out of nowhere, this is where the NBA goes dark. Players enjoy their summers and they go on vacations. But then once we get to mid-September and training camp rolls around, we'll be back to the daily show you've come to know us as. And so we again thank all of you for listening and for giving us a chance. Even now with two shows a week, I think we're still by far the most active Houston Rockets podcast out there. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. I am, of course, by day a reporter at Sports Talk 790, the official flagship station of the Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Lockdown Rockets. And you can email us at lockdownrockets@gmail.com with any advertising inquiries or longer questions that you might have. Also, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter or by email with any questions you have about the team. We do regular Twitter mailbag segments, and I suspect we'll return to that next week. In the meantime, with our show going back to this bi-weekly model, I also encourage you guys to check out Locked On Texans. They're part of the same Locked On Podcast Network. They're launching very soon, headed up by Aaron Wilson, the Texans beat writer for the Houston Chronicle. While things are a little slow on Rockets news these days, that's certainly not the case with the Texans over at NRG Park. Training camp started this week. Tons of big news. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the Texans. And if you're a Houston sports fan and you want more podcasts like this one, I urge you to subscribe to Locked On Texans, as well as a few others on the Locked On Podcast Network, because there's some really good content out there for you guys on a daily basis. With that said, I'm going to sign off. Again, this is Ben Dubose, and this is Locked On Rockets. We'll see you next week.